I love time management. It's one of my very favorite subjects, and I'm so excited to give it to you today. Let me do a little bit of time trivia with you for a moment, okay? Just an introduction. You're just kind of settling in now. You got your notes, and you're ready to start really just getting on with this program. But let me give you some time trivia. Let me ask you a question. How long did it take for the Wright brothers' first flight when they launched their little homemade crackpot of an idea down a runway in Kitty Hawk? Do you know how long they were in the air? 12 seconds. The Boston Tea Party. Do you know how long it lasted? 3 hours. Columbus' first trip to the New World required 2 months, 9 days. In 1876, the Battle of Little Bighorn, you know, that's where General George Custer and his 264 men were wiped out by 4,000 Indians. Do you know how long Custer's last stand? We know that. In fact, someday I'll do a tape on the 3 mistakes that General Custer made. I've got a lesson on it. Right. I've got a lesson on everything. But I've got it. I've got a lesson. He made 3 major mistakes. Now I'm going to tell you now because I'm kind of excited about it, but I'm not going to tell you. That's another tape. You understand. That's down the road. But for that whole wipeout, it lasted only 30 minutes. You talk about bad leadership. Custer's last statement to his men before they broke rank to fight the Indians were, "Take it easy, boys. There'll be enough Indians for everyone." You talk about setting your people up for a fall and a miserable failure in life. 30 minutes for Custer. How about the OK Corral gunfight with Wyatt Earp? You remember his buddies that he's so well known for? You know how long that took? 30 seconds. There was 2 hours and 40 minutes that elapsed between the time the Titanic struck an iceberg and when it slipped beneath the waves. Just interesting things. Took Charles Lindbergh 33 hours and 29 minutes and 30 seconds to become the first man to fly solo across the Atlantic Ocean. The Hindenburg, the explosion, the whole process of it burning up, 2 minutes and 20 seconds. When you think of Pearl Harbor, we lost 2,400 lives in Pearl Harbor, 16 ships, 2 hours. Neil Armstrong, remember in his walk on the moon back in July 20th, 1969? We all remember where we were when that happened. His walk on the moon was 2 hours and 21 minutes. Here's one. Well, let me give one. This is just fine. Just time trivia. You know, you think of these events and how long did it take? Sometimes it takes longer than you thought, sometimes less. Here's one. For Congress to spend $1 billion. Yeah. Well, they just spent another $1 billion. No, it takes 10 hours and 20 minutes for Congress to spend an extra $1 billion. Okay, just some time trivia for us to get us started. I have a card on my desk. And I look at it every couple of days because it always amuses me. And I have that in your notes. God put me on earth to accomplish a certain number of things. Right now, I'm so far behind that I will never die. Huh? Have you been there before? Every once in a while. In fact, for the last 6 days, I've had one of these unbelievable schedules. And there have been times when I've looked at that card and I thought, there's no chance of me dying right now. I am safe. I've got so much to accomplish. Now, there are 4 or 5 reasons for this lesson. So let's jump into it. Number one is, most of us are overloaded. I think we all understand it here. What overload means. I mean, we all know what it's like to have a lot of work, not be able to accomplish all of it. And you know what? This lesson is kind of there. It's kind of like a guy. There was a guy in the English Parliament named Samuel Plimsoll, and this guy felt that there were many ships that were going out of the harbors in England that were overloaded with merchandise, and so he's the guy that developed the line that you put on the ships called the Plimsoll line. Which basically says when that line goes underneath the water, that ship is overloaded. And I thought to myself, this tape is going out of a whole bunch of people that the Plimsoll line's gone down below the surface, has it? Huh? It's kind of, in fact, hey, for some of us, the ship's gone down underneath the surface. We need to pull that ship out of the water. And what I want to do is help you through this time management lesson today as we talk about timely advice about time. What I want to do is help you to perhaps reprioritize what you're putting on the ship so that we can get that load a little bit lighter so that we can be more effective on the time that we really have with the life that we've been given. So one reason we do this lesson is most of us are overloaded. Another reason we do this lesson is in an age of conveniences, there are many inconveniences. Many of the things in life that have been designed and invented to save us time cost us time also. And you've seen probably some of this stuff before, but do you realize in our life, in an average lifetime of an American, we'll spend 6 months sitting at traffic lights waiting for them to change? Now, some of us won't, but I'm not going to get into that. Some of us are a little more creative. Anyway, some of us spend 1 year searching through desk clutter. 1 year of our lifetime looking for misplaced objects. Come on now. Where is it? I know it. It's in this pile. I saw it last Christmas. Now, where is that? Where is that thing, huh? Some of us spend 8 months opening junk mail in our lifetime, 2 years trying to call people who aren't in or whose line is busy. We spend 5 years waiting in lines, 3 years in meetings. And it's just we spend a lot of time just waiting. Jim and I were at Dallas at Promise Keepers event a couple weeks ago. And it seemed like they were always taking us in this van and we were going from one place to another. And we had this van driver who was, Jim, let me tell the story. Let's put it this way, this guy was one of the nicest guys you ever want to meet. You just don't want him to drive your van. You know what I'm saying? Wonderful guy. But I mean, he was slow. He couldn't make decisions. He got lost all the time. Now, here you got Jim and me in this van. This man should not have had the bad luck to have to transport the two of us. I mean, two bosses, two leaders of leaders, two guys who think they know they're right, even when they aren't. And we're trying to help this guy. And I mean, Jim's back there. He's giving directions. I'm giving directions. We're telling this guy, stop, start. You can turn around here. Look over here. Go this way. Go this way. And Jim and I are getting antsy for the moment. And finally, I look back at Jim, and he looks at me, and we both know what we are both thinking at the same time. And both of us look at each other and say, we'd give $100 if he'd let us drive this van. Here's $1,000. Just let me drive this. Let me buy the van. Can I buy you? I mean, what can we do? Just put you in the back. Well, what happens is in this unbelievable world of conveniences, there are all kind of major inconveniences. And we're going to try to help you get a handle on time management. Third reason for this lesson is that time is an equal opportunity employer. That's a fact. But how we treat it is not equal. And there's a wonderful quote by Dennis Waitley out of his book, The Joy of Working, in your notes, that really helps us understand this. Time is an equal opportunity employer. That's what Dennis says. Each human being has exactly the same number of hours, minutes, every day. Rich people don't buy more hours. Scientists can't invent new minutes. We can't save time to spend it in another day. Even so, time is amazingly fair and forgiving. No matter how much time you've wasted in the past, you still have an entire tomorrow. Success depends upon using it wisely by planning, setting priorities. The fact is, time is worth more than money. And by killing time, we are killing our chances for success. Boy, isn't that true? The reason we're doing this lesson is because we only do have 24 hours. But if you're a good time manager, you get a lot more out of 24 hours than if you're an unwise manager of time. The fourth reason for this lesson is to help you become more effective. And that's really a desire of ours. You see, the LA Times reported that James A. Fields, a noted management consultant, stated that the average worker is productive only 55% of the time. Whoa. About 15% of his effort is lost to personal time, and 30% is lost through scheduling problems, unclear assignments, improper staffing, and poor discipline. That gives me a desire to learn this lesson. How about you, huh? I put in some basic facts about time. This is from Antonio Herrera, who has a time management seminar. Look what he says. We all waste time. We cannot change time. We must accept time as the most important resource of mankind. We cannot increase the quantity of time. We cannot do everything. We can only control time, and we must accept the fact that we are all procrastinators. Facts 1 through 3 force us to take the first step in time management. Whoa. Facts 4 and 5 take you to the second step, planning and organizing. Fact 6 takes us to the third step, control. And finally, a fact step places before you the worst enemy of all of our time, and that is procrastination itself. Albert Schweitzer is a guy that I've always admired. I've read his life story, and one time he was asked, as he was being interviewed by a reporter in London, you know, Albert Schweitzer spent his whole life basically as a doctor helping people who had physical needs in Africa. And the reporter was talking to Dr. Schweitzer, and he said, what do you think is wrong with men today? And Albert Schweitzer said, if I could center in on one issue, I would say this, that men simply don't think. I would like to apply this to this lesson. Now, here's what I believe. I believe that we literally go through life day in, day out. I mean, it's amazing how many days, weeks, months, years we spend without ever sitting down and thinking about time and what we're doing with it. And the value that it can bring to us if we do it correctly. Peter Drucker said, nothing else perhaps distinguishes effective executives as much as their loving care of time. I spent 3 days with Peter Drucker. 30 of us spent 3 days just being mentored by him, 12 hours a day. One of the best times of my life. I learned so much from him. Now, how do we get the most out of this lesson? One, check the areas that need improvement. Two, work on the weak area, work on each weak area for 1 week. And three, ask someone to hold you accountable. Let's go. I'm going to give you some timely advice about time. Number one, be time conscious. I think the foundation of this lesson has got to be that you and I have to develop a time consciousness. Abraham Lincoln, to Union governors over 100 years ago, said, time is everything. Please act in view of this. Now, what I did is in your notes, I put in a mathematical parallel of a 70-year lifespan with a 24-hour day. In other words, if your lifespan was on 24 hours, all you got to do is go down here and look at your age in that middle area. You know, for example, if you're 30, whoa, yeah, been there, haven't you? I love it. Been there, done that, haven't you? Huh? Well, let's pass 30. I mean, I'm down here at 48, so I'm almost 50. If you are 50, it is 6:50 in the evening. 6:50 in the evening. Well, yeah, it's exactly right. Later, I've got 5 hours and 10 minutes before it's over. Now, all I'm trying to do is help us understand. You know, some people think that life is a dress rehearsal. They kind of think that they're going through this thing, and when they're done, they get to come back and try it again. And we really don't get to try it again. And once we get to understand time consciousness, it just begins to change our entire perspective. I saw a cute cartoon the other day. It's not in your notes, but it's two guys, and they're playing X and O's, and they're stranded on a little island. You can tell nobody's there, no civilization near. I mean, they're two guys stranded on an island, and one guy is a choleric, no doubt. And he's talking to the other guy, and he says, come on, come on, we haven't got all day. So I want you to, first of all, develop a time consciousness. Are you ready for number two? Make a personal time log for 1 week. Now, I've taught this part of this lesson. I've taught this for years. Can I tell you what I know you're feeling right now? You don't want to do this. We don't want to do a time log. I want to tell you something. I promise you this. If you will be honest, and it takes a great amount of honesty, what you may want to do is let your spouse keep a time log on you. But then that deals with divorce and breakup of marriages. If you'll be honest, the most revealing thing you'll ever do for your life is to keep a time log for yourself for 1 week. I've done it. I understand this process. I want you to keep that time log in 15-minute segments. Now, obviously, if you go to bed at 11:30 and you're up at 6, then you've got 6.5 hours that you've just knocked out. And please, it doesn't mean you have to set the alarm every 15 minutes. During the middle of the night, wake up, put in your log, I've been sleeping. You know what I'm saying? No. But what I... It's like the people when they want to change the clock, they set the clock for 2:00 in the morning so they can go change the clock in an hour one way or the other. And you know what I mean? To make sure. No, you don't have to do that. Now, this is an IQ test, folks. This is an IQ. But your waking hours, and it's very simple. I'm going to tell you how to do it. You don't even have to keep a day timer with you or nothing. Just keep a small piece of pad of paper, a legal pad if you want to. Literally break up your day in 15-minute segments on both sides and just slip in there what you're doing for that whole day. Every 15 minutes. Now, you may be doing the same project. You may be seeing the same person at the same time. I don't know. But whatever you're doing, put it in there. And then when you have it, at the end of the week, back up and see what you've done with your time. You're going to find all kind of interesting things. You're going to find out that you had 15-minute shots all during that week that you really kind of killed time. 15-minute shots, then in a few minutes I'm going to talk to you about what you could do in those 15 minutes that could be very life-changing for you. Just keep a time log. You know, 60 seconds is incredible. You ask a surgeon, surgeon will tell you 60 seconds many times on the operating table is the difference between life and death. Advertisers on TV, do you know what they pay for 60 seconds to get their message across so that you and I will buy that product? An auto racer, 60 seconds. An auto racer said, I'd like to have sometimes 1 second, which is the difference between winning and losing. Okay, just do a personal time log for 1 week in 15-minute segments and see what happens. Number three, identify your major time wasters and eliminate one per week. Now, let me say something about the tapes you're going to be getting on a monthly basis. Let me say something about this lesson. You can already tell this lesson is loaded with notes. This lesson is loaded out. I have 40 time wasters that I got one time several years ago in a sales conference. 40 time wasters that people just deal with. Now, here's what this is for. The reason I have this for you is when this, you can shut this tape off anytime you want to, or you can listen to this tape, but you go back through this stuff. This is a lesson that you probably are going to revisit a half a dozen times this month. You're going to go back, look at things, look at some of the statements I've made. This 40 time wasters that affect our efficiency in life. I want to tell you something. I went through this 40 when I was doing this lesson, and I have six of them that are what I would call time wasters for me. Six out of 40. 34 of them I'm good at, but six of them I'm not so good at. And I looked at those six, and you know what made me feel better than anything else? I had a system to fix all six. What you've got to do is you've got to identify a time waster, and after you identify a time waster, you've got to know what it is, give it to somebody that knows you and can hold you accountable, and then sit down with that person and develop a system to help you with that time waster until you have a way to check yourself and get going on it again. Very, very important. Identify your major time wasters. Know what they are. For example, one of my time wasters, and it's really a weak area in my life, it's been a weaker area in the past because I've worked on it now for several years, is I do not like to say no to people when they ask me to do something. I really don't. I mean, I like to help people, and I'm a natural type of encourage person. And you know what I had to do? I had to literally bring people around me that would hold me accountable on my schedule because I was just out there saying yes to everything, you know what I'm saying, and working 500 days a year, you know what I'm saying, and that's hard to do. But I was overcommitting. And so what you have to do is what I had to do in that situation. I had to bring people around me to help me accountable who basically had veto power over my schedule. And what they did is they started vetoing everything. It was awesome. I mean, I just sat there and they took me from busy boy to, you know, now I'm looking for work. You know how that goes, okay? Okay. So what you have to do is you have to find out what your time wasters are and develop. Remember this. Listen very carefully to what I'm about to say. It does you no good to know what you do in wasting time if you do not have a system to fix it. I cannot stress to you enough, knowledge of a problem never fixes the problem. What you have to do is identify this time waster and then sit down and develop a system. And by the way, I am going to do an entire tape on systems. How to develop systems in your life, because my life is full of systems. So that you can see, once you get that time waster identified, then you have to say, okay, now how do I fix it so long, no longer is it a time waster? Okay, number four, place a value on your activity. The things that you do, that time log that I told you to keep, after you've done that time log, what you've got to do is look at that, where you're spending your time, and then you've got to begin to place a value on everything that you do. Look at this phrase in your notes. Once you know what you value, you make better use of your time. Most of us operate under pressure instead of priorities. That's a fact with all of us, okay? And we've got to stop this. We many times miss the best because we haven't placed enough value on it. I saw a cartoon the other day where a couple were rushing out of their car. They double parked, going into a museum, and they're on the way into the museum. They're yelling at the officer, said, quick, where's the Mona Lisa? We're double parked. You know, we want to glance at this baby and keep on going. Well, you see, they didn't have a value on that event. They didn't place the right value on it. We've got to have a right value for time. Let me give you an example. I talked a moment ago about my schedule. Now that I'm talking to you about this schedule, I developed many years ago now what I called a hatchet committee. And I call it a hatchet committee because that's really what it does. It just hacks up everything I try to get accomplished. They cut my schedule way down. And this hatchet committee is my accountability committee on everything that I do as far as speaking. When I get invitations, for example, in the last 3 months, we've gotten, 100 and some invitations, of which we've said no to every one of them because I don't have any time. But this committee looks at things and says, okay, you know, this, and they have a criteria. And I'm going to just give you the criteria of our hatchet committee only to help you understand how to value time. And you can, if you want to, take notes. If you want to, just listen. But listen to this. For example, they ask questions like, how many leaders will John talk to? This has what the hatchet committee calls multiplication value. How many leaders is John going to talk to? Because I'm not interested in talking to followers. Followers can't multiply anything. I'm interested in talking to leaders. Another question is, has he spoken to this group before? This has influence value. In other words, is this somewhere where it's going to be new, where there's going to be some major impact? Or is it this a place where I've been before to where you're getting to know who I am so I can begin to train and build on tapes and build on lessons? Or three, does this request play to John's strength? In other words, this deals with the giftedness value. I have certain gifts that I'm really good at. I'm excellent at teaching leadership. There are certain qualities and certain subjects that I really do well talking about. And there are certain subjects I don't do well talking about and I don't know anything about, so I shouldn't even be talking anyway. But this, it's a giftedness issue. Number four, will it meet the financial needs of Enjoy? Every time I go out, there are X amount of dollars that it costs to have me out there because we have 55 full-time employees now. We get between 9,000 and 10,000 calls a month, and it's getting to be a major deal, and it's going to be 100 employees within the next 12 months, and it just keeps growing. So there has to, if I'm out there, is it going to give some kind of a financial return to the organization? And number five, will this be a life-changing event? Does this event have life-changing power? That is a growth value. That's a growth value. And that's why a couple weeks ago I was in Dallas at Promise Keepers, because we call those life-changing events, okay? So all I'm saying is you've got to put a value on time. Great story, because there are certain people I read a lot after. Ben Franklin's one. A fellow came into Ben Franklin's store one day, and one of the clerks at Ben Franklin waited on him, and he saw a book. He said, how much is the book? And the assistant said, a dollar. And started haggling over the price and said, oh, come on, it's got to be, yeah, that's not a dollar, and haggling. And the assistant said, no, it's a dollar. And he said, I want to speak to Mr. Franklin. So he thought he'd get to the top guy. So Benjamin Franklin came out and said, how much is this book? Benjamin Franklin said, a dollar and a quarter. He said, wait a minute, your assistant just said it was a dollar. He said it was. But now you're wasting my time. It's a dollar and a quarter. And then he looked at the guy. Hey, he looked at the same guy and said, I want to tell you something. Talk another minute, and it'll be a dollar and a half. Now, what Benjamin Franklin was basically saying is he understood the value of time. He understood that time rightly, effectively placed in a person's life can have a major return in that life. Does that make sense? Yes. And so many times when we aren't doing the work or we're killing time, we don't realize the value of it. Very good illustration on just helping us understand that every hour that stops or passes us, we're losing prospects, we're losing dollars, we're losing all kinds of things. Number five, be result-oriented rather than activity-oriented. This is so key. Activity is not necessarily accomplishment. Can I tell you something? People come and say, whoa, have I had a busy day. Hey, so what? I know a whole bunch of busy people. That isn't the question. The question isn't what time you got up, how long you worked, how many hours you put in a day. You drop and you get put your head on the pillow at 12 o'clock at night. Whoa, man, worked 18 hours a day. Big deal. The question is how many hours you work. Activity is not accomplishment. You see, what we've got to do is we've got to quit measuring success by the hours that we work. And we got to ask ourselves, are we getting results for it? Activity is not necessarily accomplishment, and I have found so many people, they somehow think that if they just put in a long day, somehow that results into money returned, it results into financial growth. Not necessarily so. Number six, understand the value of planning. People that waste time underestimate the value of planning. I know this for a fact. I have a quote myself in here. It's a great quote. I'll read my own quote here. Every minute spent in planning will save 10 in execution. Now, folks, you are now listening to a master when it comes to planning. I meant to, and I forgot it. I'm so sorry. Next time I do one of these lessons, I'll probably bring it with me. But it doesn't matter. I can explain it to you. Last Wednesday, I went to Toronto, Canada, to teach leadership to all of the officers of the Salvation Army. So I left on Wednesday. Thursday, I taught leadership in Toronto. Thursday evening, I left to Columbus, Ohio. And then Friday, I taught leadership to a large group in Columbus. I left Friday evening and flew to Denver, and I spoke to 2,500 people in Denver, equipping them. Finished at 4 o'clock in Denver. They had a private Lear pick me up, take me to Tulsa. 2 hours later, I was speaking to about 4,000 people in Tulsa Saturday night. And Sunday morning, I spoke. And Sunday night, I went to a banquet and helped a pastor raise about $9 million. Okay, now, it was a busy day. It was a busy weekend. Now, in the midst of all that, gang, if I had my folder, I'd show it to you. I literally outlined every day. Spent probably 5 hours getting ready for that one trip. While I was on that trip, I did the lesson I'm teaching you right now. While I was on that trip, I prepared the material, although didn't finish the lesson, for the lesson I'm going to do for you next in the next tape. While I was on that trip, I read 2 books. While I was on that trip, I handled 7 major phone calls. I mean, when I'm talking about major calls, calls that have got to take 30 minutes because deals are pending or whatever. Now, the only reason I could do that is because I spent the 4 to 5 hours planning. I mean, I had it ready, so when I put my stuff in that folder, I was ready to go. When Jim and I went to Dallas a couple of weekends ago, I mean, I had a folder. I had 27 questions I wanted to ask him. I had 13 ideas I wanted to share with him. I mean, I had 2 jokes I wanted to tell him. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Now what I'm saying is, it's amazing what you can get accomplished if on the front end you'll think. How many people get on planes and never think? I'm spending Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and a half day Monday come back. I'm spending 5.5 days of my life. And I had better understand what I'm going to do when I get on that plane to take all the value that I possibly can. And all I'm saying is, in our life, we underestimate the value of planning, and we somehow think that it automatically happens. The best advice I can give you in time management, especially for you that travel much at all, is always block out a couple of hours and write out what you're going to do while you're gone. Put the materials that you're going to need in folders in your briefcase and systematically check off those boxes as you're going through the process. You don't waste time that way. You understand. You get right to the issues of what you need to get done. It's very important. Number 7. 7th tip on time management, stay on your agenda. I saw a cartoon recently in the Wall Street Journal where a boss was speaking to his employee, and here's what he said. He said, "It's lonely at the top, Harris, but it's not so lonely that I want you walking in my office 20 times a day." Yeah, I could be a little lonelier. Now, one of the things I think that happens to us is many times we get on someone else's agenda instead of ours. A leader understands at all times what he or she is willing to accomplish and what he desires to accomplish. Today, for example, going to Los Angeles, I had one of my staff with me, Dan Ryland. I wanted Dan with me because I wanted to talk to him about several things. He's writing a book right now, so he's in the middle of a book project. He's starting a mentoring program called Leadership Roundtable. So I've got this whole agenda. So Dan drives while I take him through the paces all the way up to Los Angeles. And the reason that we're doing that is because I want to redeem that time that we have at that moment. Now, the thing that is important is we're wanting to stay on my agenda. Here's what happens. People, if you're not careful, people that you're trying to help will bring their agenda to you. And if you're not careful, you'll spend more time on. And here's what I learned a long time ago. When I spend time on their agenda, I'm normally not on my agenda. And I'm normally not on what their priorities are. So even in counseling, talking to people, Constantly have a purpose, have a reason. When you have your meeting, have an agenda. What do you want to get accomplished in that meeting? That's very key. If you stay on your agenda, you'll get a lot more accomplished.
Please stop the tape at this point and go to side two for the continuation of this month's Maximum Impact lesson, Timely Advice About Time.
Number 8, keep responsibility where it belongs. This is a wonderful time management tip. I'm going to talk to you about how to do this in a moment. Keep responsibility where it belongs. I have another one of my quotes here. When we do something for someone else that they should do for themselves, they do something to us that no one should do. Steal our time and energy. Now, let me explain to you how this works. When I was pastoring the Skyline and had X amount of staff under me, this whole issue, we'd get in meetings, in brainstorming meetings, board meetings, and maybe I'll have a staff member come and say, John, we got a problem over here that we need to get fixed. I allowed nobody to bring a problem to me until they had at least two options of how to fix it. Now listen to me very carefully. The easiest thing in life is to find a problem. You don't even have to have a 3-digit IQ to find problems. In fact, people are gifted for this. In fact, some people, they can find a problem in every solution. Are you with me? What you've got to do is you've got to help people understand that if they find a problem, which is nothing wrong with that, we want them to find problems, they need to get creative. See, what happens is so many people, they want to dump it on you. They want to come and say, hey, we've got this problem. Here you are. You know, and you know what happens? We become Mr. Answer Man. We become Mr. Fix-It, Miss Fix-It. And so what's happened is we're doing all this stuff for somebody instead of putting the responsibility back on there. That's why I have in your notes Maxwell's 80-20 rule of responsibility. Here it is. You do the first 80%, and I'll do the last 20%. This is what I call putting the cherry on the time. You can call me Mr. Ice Cream Man. You put the ice cream, get the hot fudge there, and what I'll do is I'll put the cherry on the top for you. That's why, hey, in drafting of letters, I don't draft my own letters. I've trained people to draft my own letters for me. They'll take it all the way to the end. You see, what they want to do is they want me to draft the letter. They want me to write the letter. They want me to do all this stuff. Why should I do all this stuff? I've got other things I've got to be doing. So what I do is I let them carry. Here's the rule. You train people. This is very important. Train people to do all they can and carry the ball as far as they can. Then you come in at the last moment and make the difference. Make the difference. I learned a long time ago, I can make a great letter out of a letter that you formed for me by just adding or twisting or taking a couple things out of it or putting something creative in it, but you do the most of the bulk of the work. In other words, keep responsibility where it belongs. Don't allow people to come to you and just let you solve their problems for them. I learned a long time ago that people who want you to do all the work for them, if you'll have this kind of an approach with them, pretty soon they'll either quit coming to you or they'll learn to fix some of their problems. We do not do people good when we do all their stuff for them. Number nine, establish buffer zones to limit access to you. Here's a great quote. A person with an hour to kill usually wants to spend it with someone who can't spare a minute. Now, let me say something here for a moment. We are all in the people business. This time management lesson is not a lesson where we exclude people out of our life. It's not an issue you're going to spend time with people. That is, I'm telling you, all our life we're going to spend time with people. Isn't that right? It's not an issue am I going to spend time with people. The issue is when I spend time with people, am I going to invest it or spend it? What's the purpose of us getting together? And when I say buffer zones for you, what you have to do is you have to allow yourself certain ways to filter out those which want to steal your time and take your time compared to those that you want to invest time with. For example, when I went to Skyline, in our offices, Pastor Butcher, who was before me, was a major, major, marvelous people person. And so when he came out of his office, it opened up into the lobby area where there would be people. So every time he'd go out of his office, there would be people. Well, then now all of a sudden you got to be with them, spend time. Hi, how you doing? Go around, shake everybody's hands, you know, and kiss all the babies, you know what I mean? And do a committal for those who are about to go and the whole process. And then you're back in your office. And when I got there, I said, wait a minute, I've got to get some kind of a buffer zone between me. I've got to get a wall. I've got to get something up there so that I can, so that when I have to do other things besides people time, I'm not constantly drawn into that. Just get buffer zones in your life. Number 10, assess your energy level and temperament. What you need to do is sit down and ask yourself questions such as, how much stress can I tolerate? How much downtime do I require in my life? How many hours a day? Just know yourself. That's all I'm saying. Number 11, I love this one. I wanted to get to 11. Develop systems for things that take time. What you've got to do is, when you do your little time log and you go through that 15-minute thing and find out where you're losing time, what you need to do is develop systems for them. When I turned 16, when I was going downtown to get my driver's license, my dad went over on the passenger side and he had a book. In fact, he had Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. He got on the passenger side, held up the book and said, the most important lesson I can ever give you about a car and driving is, and he opened the glove compartment, is always have a book in the car. He said, you never know when you're going to be stopped by an accident. You never know when there's going to be a situation where there's a railroad crossing. You never know when you're going to be stalled. You never know when you're going to wait for people. He said, if you have a book in the car, and this was the day before tapes were really big. He said, if you got a book in the car, he says, you'll always have something to do in those spare minutes. Now, he didn't teach me anything about driving, but he taught me a lot about life. So let me just explain to you. From that day on, I asked myself, what do I do in a car? Now, this is the average person spends 1 hour a day in a car. So that's 7 hours a week. That's almost a very small work day, 8 hours. If you think that's a work day, okay. For some it is, okay, who have no dreams. Anyway, but it's all right. There's nothing wrong with it. There are many people who don't want to go diamond. You understand that. Everybody has a choice in life, and for those who decide that they just want to live on the slab of mediocrity the rest of their life, that's their choice. Everybody has a choice in their life. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, but if I have an hour a day, that's 7 hours a week, what do I do in a car? Now, before I tell you six things I do in a car, again, today I'm going to Los Angeles, I'm coming back, I'm going to literally spend 4 hours in a car today. And I had work from my administrative assistant that she gave me in the car. In fact, she was down at the offices at 5 o'clock this morning giving me my stuff so that I could get going, and I go through it. I've got Dan Ryland in the car so I can talk to him about the projects that we're developing on. I've got two major phone calls to make during that trip so that I can talk about issues. Okay, in other words, I want to redeem my 4 hours. Now, what do I do in a car? Number one, I return phone calls in my car. Now, I do not give out my car phone number. In fact, you know what? I don't know my car phone number. I don't know. In fact, when I'm talking to somebody on the car phone and they say, what's your phone number? I tell them I don't know. And then they think, this is a real idiot I'm talking to. This is a stupid man. Hey, stupid on purpose. If I don't know my phone number, guess what I don't have to do to you? Give it to you. That's very important. You know why it's important? I want to have control of my own phone. If you got my phone number, excuse me, I'm on your agenda. And so therefore, what I do is, I very seldom return calls at home. What I do is I realize I'm going to go out in the car from 1 to 1:30 on a trip. I stack those phone calls up. The moment I'm in my car, boom, 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 I'm down those numbers, and I'm making those five-minute shots. That's one thing I do in a car. Number two, I listen to tapes in the car. I try to listen to 7 hours of tape a week in the car. If you would go to my office desk right now at home, you would find stacks of tapes with rubber bands around them, 7 tapes each, that I have. And every week I just try to take those 7 tapes off, throw them in my car, I put those tapes in, and I make it a learning time for me, and I give the person 5 minutes to get good on a tape. And if they're not good in 5 minutes, I got that tape gone, baby. Hey, if you're listening to this in a car, don't you throw this tape away. This is a very important tape. Don't you throw this thing away. There's gold here on this tape. I'm about to tell you something's going to change your life. Don't you throw this tape away. That you take this tape and listen to it over and over and over and over and over again and take notes on it and transcribe it. It's those other tapes we're talking about. Isn't that right? Okay, now, you know the third thing I do in my car? I record thoughts on a dictaphone. Man, when I'm thinking, or if I get a good thought off the tape or something, man, I grab that old dictaphone and I just quote right into that baby. I learned a long time ago that if you just say it now, so I think things. Okay, number four, the fourth thing I do is when I'm going to go speak, so I rehearse speeches in a car. Man, when I'm getting ready to go speak somewhere, a lot of times I'll get my outline, put it right up there on my dashboard, right over the speedometer where it usually is. You know what I'm saying? And rehearse that little sucker as I'm going down the road. Number five, I make lists in a car. I have a pad of paper that I make lists, things that I want to do, thoughts that come to me, and I just make lists of things that I, you know, maybe I want to call Linda about or check with Dick about or whatever. I just make lists. And number six, the sixth thing I do in a car is I drive. But that is very unimportant compared to those other five things. Those first five things I do awesome. And after I do those first five, sometimes I get out of my own driveway and I drive somewhere. No, okay. Now, let me say one more thing. I'm going to talk about systems later on, but let me, because this just intrigues me. What intrigues me about people is they go through life doing certain things every day and have never developed a system for doing it. Meetings, for example. We're all into meetings. I mean, sometimes I'll have, Friday I'll have meetings. I'll have meetings for 8 hours all day, just nothing but meetings. Now, a couple of things I learned about meetings. One is, I always prefer going to their office instead of having them come to mine. Even when I was the head honcho with all these people under me, I didn't have them very seldom come to my office. You know why I go to their office? I can leave. That's exactly right. If I go to your office, I can listen to you, and when I'm done, I'm done. Man, if you're in my office, you're done. You don't know you're done half the time. But if it is in my office, I have my assistant trained every 30 minutes to come in and say, Pastor, your next appointment's here. Boom. Boom, boom. Now, all I'm saying is you got to have systems. Because if you don't have systems, you know what you do? You'll spend all day talking to people and accomplishing nothing. What you want to do is talk to people and accomplish something. Number 12. Simplify everything. This is a great time management tip. Simplify everything. Look at the quote I have here for you. The best way to save time and increase production is to make every job simpler and easier. In recent years, 100 specialists in the field have been putting the principle to work on behalf of industry. Where work simplification methods have been applied, output has jumped as much as 30%. The principle, says Mr. Deal, is no secret, and its application is simple. It is organized common sense. Do you remember The Odd Couple? Do you remember the TV program, The Odd Couple? Remember Oscar Madison? Huh? Remember Oscar? He was the real klutzy, cluttery kind of guy that had junk all around his life. You remember that? Now, there are a lot of Oscar Madisons in life that have clutter all over their life. I mean, I don't know. They just seem to collect clutter. They just are a clutter collector. Okay? Now, there are some clutter that you need to get rid of because it will rob you of your time, such as one, schedule clutter. When we fail to prioritize, plan, and remove interruptions, we will have schedule clutter. And how do you clear out schedule clutter? You do it by four things. A, knowing your priorities. In other words, I'm talking about your calendar now. What are you putting on your calendar? Know your priorities. Two, letter B, place them in the calendar first. Life is a race to the calendar. If I put in my agenda on the calendar, I prioritize. If I put someone else's agenda on my calendar, I'm on their priority system. So place in the calendar first. Letter C, have a plan for interruptions. Have a plan for them. And letter D, have a place where you cannot be interrupted. I've always found it significant that when I have to do major work, I have to have a place where nobody can get to me for maybe 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever it's going to take for me to get this work done. Now, all I'm saying is your calendar, if you're not careful, can become very cluttered with stuff. But there's number two. Now, I've never heard anybody talk about this kind of clutter, but I can promise you it's worse than the calendar clutter. It's what I call emotional clutter. Emotional clutter is all of the unresolved conflict we have in our life. Whether it's an argument with our spouse, that instead of before we left the home this morning saying, honey, I was wrong, I'm sorry, will you forgive me? We slam the door. We get over to the office. Now, are we concentrating on our work? No, because you know what we're doing? We're rehearsing what we should have taken care of back home. Now, I'm telling you right now, I have no way of testing this, but here's what I'm convinced of without any question. You take things such as anger, depression, anxiety, strife, bitterness, resentment, all this stuff. Here's what I believe. I believe people waste hours a day because of unresolved conflict in their life that if they would have just taken care of, it would have made a major difference in their life. It's what I call having a clean sheet emotionally, so that you can dive into your work without having all this other stuff that you're trying to carry with you. Then thirdly is administrative clutter. And that's stuff like paperwork, all kinds of stuff. How do you clean up administrative clutter? Letter A, never hear or handle anything first. I'll explain that in a moment. B, never hear or handle anything alone. C, never hear or handle anything twice. Now, I just gave you some great tips. And letter D, never hear or handle anything that can be heard and handled by someone else. Isn't that good?
Yes.
Now, gang, let me talk to you here for a moment. If you're fortunate enough, and some of you are, some of you are not, but if you're fortunate enough to have an assistant, I mean, let them process everything first. You should never, if you're hearing stuff first, if you're fortunate enough, you should never do that. You should never handle anything alone. How do I explain this? Well, Charlie's here today. This is the best way to explain it. Charlie Wetzel is my researcher, and he does a great job, and he makes me look very, very good, okay? Now, Charlie's here for a reason. Charlie's here just in case there's something that needs to be handled. I may say something today that Charlie's never heard me say before, and he'll write it down. It'll be a new thought. Now, he did that once back in 1984. I remember. I had this new thought, and Charlie just picked up on it. We were in, Charlie, you were with me in Charlotte and Kansas City about a month ago, right? Charlie was with me in Kansas City and Charlotte a month ago. When we came back, he, about 3 days later, gave me an 11-page report of new things I said, ways that it was said that really spoke to people's needs, ideas for things, for subjects for me to talk on out of things that I said, 11 pages. Because I have trained him to glean for me. It's very important. Never handle first things alone. Never handle them twice. Hey, when you sit there and you get a piece of paper, figure out what you want to do with it then. Can I tell you something? If you lay it down and say, I'll read this later again, it doesn't get any better, folks. You pick it up the second time, you'll read it. I'll get back to that. How many times, unless you're just into weightlifting, do you have to pick up that piece of paper before we put it where it belongs or what it's going to be? All right, number 13, start the project. Start the project. The greatest time wasted is time getting started. When I say, I used to have to play the piano. I used to have piano lessons. Do you know the hardest part about practicing was sitting down at the keyboard and get it going? Huh? So become, just get started. Number 14, do it right the first time. In fact, if you don't have time to do it right, when you have time to do it over. Okay? So make sure you do it right the first time. Number 15, select the right time of the day to do the right thing. Select the right time of the day to do the right thing. There are certain things we do better in the morning, and here's what you got to do. One, you have to know your temperament. Two, you have to know your priorities. And three, you have to know the people you work with. Number 16, place deadlines on yourself. Place deadlines on yourself. I really agree with the anonymous quote in your notes. To do great, important tasks, two things are necessary. A plan and not quite enough time. Huh? What do you think? Can I tell you what I have found about procrastinators? Now, we all procrastinate to a certain extent, but there are some people, they major in it. Can I tell you a very common characteristic of people who have a habit of procrastinating?
People who have a habit of procrastination are what I call interruption prone. They set themselves up for interruptions, and they kind of like interruptions because it keeps them from doing what things they need to have done in their life. So place deadlines on yourself. What I do, very simply, is I sit down and I schedule my calendar out. I have scheduled my calendar out every day now until December the 10th. Every day is scheduled. If you went to my office right now, sat there on my desk, you would find day by day blow, literally hour by hour, of what I'm doing up through December 10th. Now, the reason I've done that is because I have a lot on me that I have got to accomplish. And so what I do is I back it up. I figure out how many things I have to accomplish, how much time it's going to take me to accomplish it, and where it fits on the calendar so I can accomplish it before a deadline. For example, we got the marriage seminar on video. Well, that takes X amount of days for me to get this thing ready the way it needs to be set. So therefore, I've got to back it out and say, okay, it's going to take me 5 days to do this right, to get good outlines, to make the lessons what they need to be. And I back it up on my calendar, and I put it in my calendar so that I understand. Now, with you, you don't have to do as much writing as me, so you don't have to do a lot of writing, but you have meetings to attend. You've got projects you need to do. And all I'm saying is you just, if you place a deadline on it. See, here's the value of a deadline. When I came back from my Toronto, Columbus, Denver, Tulsa trip, I was a half book behind. I knew exactly where I was. I was one. All the things I planned, I got everything done, but the second book, I only got halfway through it. Now, therefore, I knew that I almost met my objectives, but I didn't quite meet them. I didn't do quite as good as I wanted to do, and that's life, and that's these things will happen. But you see, if you don't have a deadline, do you know why professional football teams score more points in the last 2 minutes than the other time? Because they have a plan to meet a deadline. That's why you and I get so much work done the day before we go on vacation. We're awesome. Did we just get awesome one day? I mean, the day before vacation, one day wake up and we got awesome. We didn't get awesome that day. I'll tell you what, we had a time deadline. All I know is when you work with deadlines, it helps you to keep the pace going. Number 17, schedule blocks of time for big projects. Here's what I have found about big projects. When I say schedule blocks of time for big projects, the larger the project, the longer the time for planning, and the larger the project, the longer the time for working. You have to plan. It takes longer to plan a big project. It takes longer to work a big project. Obviously, put them on the calendar. Number 18, be ready for blank spaces in your time. Be ready for blank spaces in your time. Most time is wasted. You see this quote? What a great quote it is. Most time is wasted not in hours but in minutes. A bucket with a small hole in the bottom gets just as empty as a bucket that is deliberately emptied. What do you do for those blank spaces in your time? Today when I was with Dan Ryland, we stopped for a few minutes, and I said, Dan, I've got to get some work done here, so I need 15 minutes where we don't talk. He says, no problem. And he reached in his briefcase, and he pulled out a book. He said, I'm ready. Now, what I'm saying is you've got to prepare for those blank times that are just going to come in your life. And so, therefore, you need to be saying, what tapes should I be listening to? What books should I be reading? Maybe that's a folder where you're doing some thinking about a better way to find prospects. Or maybe you need to get another list, make a list. Whatever it is, you need just to have some, you just need to always be ready so when that blank time comes to you, it doesn't catch you unaware. Number 19, have a place for everything. Have a place for everything. Here's out of the Wall Street Journal. Executives waste nearly 6 weeks a year looking for misplaced items, according to a poll by 200 large company execs out of account of tabs, et cetera. Okay, look at that. Major amount, 6 weeks a year. Number one time waster, you know what it is, looking for things that are lost. For example, handling paper, when you get papers, there are only three things that you ought to do with it, and you ought to do with it immediately. Either one, throw it away. That's a thought. Two, take action on it. I mean, there are some papers you get and you say, I've got to act on this, okay. Or number three, file it. know where to put them. You know what I'll do someday for just fun? This would make a fun Enjoy Life Club tape sometime. You know what I'd like to do sometime is literally just bring in my filing system. I'll sit down with you and show you how simple it is to put things where they belong the very first time. Number 20, delegate to others. There are times in time management that we can take our work and we can delegate it to others. So let me give you some quick points on delegation, and then let me wrap it up with a thought or two, and this time management lesson will be over. Successful delegation has the following characteristics. One, know yourself. You and I have to know ourselves, our strengths, and our weaknesses in order to be able to delegate well. There are some things we need to hold on to, and there are some things we need to let go of. Number two, know your team. Know your team. Don't put a sword in a madman's hand. In other words, don't give something to someone who cannot handle the job. Number three, clearly define the task. When you're ready to hand off the ball to someone, you know, when a football team calls a play and they hand the ball off to the running back, the running back knows which hole to go through in the line. I mean, it's not just here's the ball, good luck. But there's a plan, there's a strategy. Number four, provide the resources necessary to accomplish the task. What you have to do when you get ready to hand the ball off to somebody is you got to ask, okay, what do they need as far as personnel resources, money resources, time resources? What do they need to run with this ball? That's very important. You will frustrate people if you hand them responsibility without handing them resources to accomplish it. You know that, don't you? Five, encourage feedback. Sit down with the people that you're going to hand the ball off to and let them talk back to you. It's very important for them to communicate, because what they'll do is they'll find things out there that you didn't know about. Number six, clarify the level of authority that you're going to give them. There are certain levels of authority. For example, when you delegate the first time, you don't give them total authority. You give them kind of enough authority to run with the ball maybe for 10 yards and come back and check with you and how are we doing, and okay, you can go on. In other words, just understand what level you should give them as far as authority. Number seven, hold people accountable. When you have given them a job, come back and talk about it. Did you do it? Did you not do it? I was talking to the president of Enjoy today on the phone coming back from L.A., and he was talking to me about a staff member that he's going to have to let go. And in the process of having to let go, he said, I have found now over the last 5 months, they do not follow through on all their assignments. And it's just tough. I mean, they're doing the job, but they're not completing. And I come back and I'm surprised again. You don't have the job done. So there's an accountability there. Number eight, recognize effort and reward results. Recognize the effort that has been made and then turn around and reward the results as far as what they have accomplished in your life. I tell the wonderful story. In fact, I thought it was such a nice story. I just put it in your notes so you could have it, because you'll want to tell it to others. About the two guys who went out chopping wood. And one guy noticed that the other guy was kind of a more effective wood chopper than he was. And yet, he wasn't. The other guy was working harder. You get down that next last paragraph. He said to him, I don't understand. Every time I looked around, you were sitting down, yet you cut more wood than I did. And his companion replied, did you also notice that while I was sitting down, I was sharpening my axe? Dr. Wilson of Denver, Colorado said it this way. This is the beginning of a new day. God has given me this day to use it as I will. I can waste it or I can use it for good. But what I do today is important because I'm exchanging a day of my life for it. Forever leaving in its place something that I've traded for it. I want it to be gain and not loss, good and not evil, success and not failure, in order that I shall not regret the price that I have paid for it. Time management. Go back, look at your life, start taking these principles one at a time, go slow, be patient with yourself, evaluate where you are, get a system, hold yourself accountable, and watch what happens. You will find out that you don't get more hours in your day, but you get more time and effectiveness out of those hours that you were given. Thank you very much.